it's been a great month together. At least I think it has. It really has for me. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope that you have enjoyed this little trip we've been taking deep into Paul's letter to the Romans. Phil's back next Sunday, and you will get a break from Paul. He's going off in a completely different direction, I think, so you can have a break from that and be thinking in some different ways, but I hope you've enjoyed it this month. I want to start by saying I appreciate all the feedback I have been getting from you all while we've been going through this. What most of you don't know is that I have actually been spending this month working on one of my learning goals for my internship. That is a goal around honing my sermon preparation process. So I've been trying some new things and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work so well. And so the feedback you've been giving me on the end result of that process has been really, really helpful. So thank you. Today, I actually want to address one of the complaints I received. And for those of you who are about to jump to my defense, I love you, but you don't need to. It was very lovingly delivered. This person was just lamenting that I haven't really told many stories this summer. No significant stories, little bits of ones. And apparently I'm a bit known for stories. I didn't realize that. But this person, I guess, finds them helpful and finds them a helpful way to learn. And so we're going to wind up what has been kind of a heady theological month, largely with, I hope, teaching through a story today. And I hope Simon will be satisfied. That's where the complaint came from. He's the only person who really tells me the truth. I love you, Si. Just before we get to the story, though, let's do a little bit of a recap to set it in its context, because whether it was obvious or not, I really did design these sermons to be a series with a shared focus. We've been thinking about how this journey of our life with God is really about moving us from where we are now to a goal God has for us. A goal of life that is perfected and completed, where we will live in complete freedom and love with each other and with God. And we have been talking about the ways that we can increasingly live towards that freedom. And I really hope that you have been left with a deeper longing for the day when we are going to get to be all together with God in that life with all that it holds. I hope that that has stirred within you, because it is our promise, and it will come, and it is going to be better than we can ever imagine or hope. Far better, and nothing, absolutely nothing, is going to prevent God from getting us to that dream. And that's really what Paul is saying in our reading today. These verses are actually drawing to a close this major section where Paul's been talking about how we make our way from where we are now to that dream of life God has for us. And as he closes his thoughts on this, he ends with these powerful proclamations, with his confidence that God's purposes will prevail and that nothing is going to stop us from seeing that life one day. And so this reading is packed with verses you probably recognize. They're ones we hold to. Verse 28. We know all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. And verse 31, a favorite of mine, if God is for us, who can be against us? And verse 37, in all things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. These are treasures the Holy Spirit has given us through Paul. They encourage us when we're discouraged, when the struggles and the suffering we face are just getting a bit much. Many of us know some of these verses by heart because they're the lifelines we cling to when life is getting too hard. And that's exactly why Paul wanted to proclaim this to the Romans at this point, because he knew full well that trying to follow Jesus to that dream of life can be very, very challenging. there is still much that is wrong in this world, and sometimes it feels like it gets a bit on top of us. But that's not really news to any of you, is it? Most of you probably know this better than even I do. Life is hard at times. We still face days when suddenly the wheels kind of fall off our wagon on us. Well, last week my lay supervision team met and we were reflecting on this a little bit in a funny way. This is the group of wonderful people who have taken on the task of overseeing my internship here within the congregation. We're preparing my midterm evaluation and they have a whole bunch of stuff they need to reflect on, one of which is my ability to respond in a crisis. Now, I have to tell you that I had a bit of a giggle at their reflection on this. They actually remarked on an event that happened on my very first Sunday on staff here at St. Stephen's 8 years ago. Now, for me, at the time, I guess it was a bit of a big deal, but looking back on it, it doesn't seem very huge, because actually it turned into a real blessing for me. And so I don't actually now think of it as a crisis. And so I giggled, because if you'd asked me to reflect on my ability to respond in a crisis, I'd have gone to a whole different experience. I would have been thinking about our mission trip to Puerto Peñasco, Mexico in 2012. Now that was a crisis. More like crisis on top of crisis on top of crisis. From the start, we should have realized that that trip was going to be an uphill battle. We were set to leave on Friday morning. That plan had been made 6 months in advance. But we woke up Thursday morning, Simon and I checked the weather forecast and found out that there was a storm about to come in and that they were forecasting it was going to be very windy Friday morning, and we were concerned that the ferries were going to be canceled and we wouldn't be able to get off the island. So we scrambled around on Thursday morning, thank you Adele, phoning all over the Lower Mainland trying to find a hotel that could put up 48 people for a night with just a few hours notice. We were able to do that. Second miracle that day was we actually got on the phone to all 48 of those people, which if you've ever had a phoning list, you know how difficult that can be to do, and asked them to pack quickly because we were going to leave sooner than we thought. We arranged to get the bus here a day early to take all those 48 people on our journey, and somehow in that day it all came together, so we were able to leave that night and get out before the storm did indeed come the next morning. Well, let's just say hindsight proved that that start was a sign for what was to come in the rest of the trip. We thought we were over the hurdles when we got off the island. No. Things were relatively calm until breakfast 2 days later. And one of our team members started to look a little bit green. At first, we just thought it was travel. They're long days and it can be hard, and we thought it was kind of taking its toll on her. But by the time we got to that evening and we were setting up our camp on the desert sands outside Puerto Peñasco, it became apparent that this was not actually travel sickness. See, travel sickness isn't contagious. And what we were dealing with, obviously, by that point was. It turned out that we had actually brought some version of norovirus with us on the trip, and our communal traveling and living together was facilitating its very quick spread throughout the team. Now, I'm not going to go into details. Any of you who've had any experience with anything Norwalkish will already know the details, so I'm sure you can fill in with your imaginations, but I want you to remember two things. The first is that we actually stay in tents when we're in Mexico. We camp rough, and so our bathroom facilities are very primitive outhouses, and we had some version of Norwalk. The second thing to remember is that we actually do all of the work building the houses by hand, including mixing and pouring all of the concrete. And so we need every single one of the 15 people that make up a Mexico mission team if we are going to get a house finished in 4 days, which is the goal. There is not a lot of slack on a Mexico team. Now, I have to say that our team members were troopers, and any of you who were on that team and are in the room today, bless you in abundance. They worked as hard and as long as they could, before eventually having to succumb and head back to camp to go to bed to try to recover. And the people who were able to remain on the job sites, well, if I ever had any doubt that it's more than just people power building those homes, I never will again. I'm not really sure how that concrete all got mixed and poured that year. Because throughout that whole first day, our team members were dropping like flies. They weren't able to do that hard, heavy work. By the end of the second day of building, we actually had about a third of the whole team down with the bug. The rest of the team was pushing on and somehow getting work done. But it's fair to say that the tensions on the site were higher that year than they have ever been before. Everyone was trying their hardest. We were all tired. Emotions were running high, probably highest of all within me, as my husband Simon and I, who lead the team, were trying to figure out how to manage this mission and care for the well-being of all of these people we were responsible for. Somehow we were managing, though, until dinner time on the third night. That's when the sandstorm hit. We've endured all sorts of weather on our mission trips. We have had lots of rain, we've had a lot of wind, we've even had frost a few times, but we've never faced anything like that sandstorm. You're going to think I'm exaggerating, but it really was like a scene from a movie. The sky got dark around supper time, the wind picked up, and then the sand started blowing. To the point that you needed to have something tied over your face and glasses on, because it was blowing into your eyes and nose and it hurt. And it didn't let up. It started around dinner time and it was still blowing at 3 o'clock in the morning. By that time, there were only about a quarter of our tents left. It wasn't just that they'd been blown down, they were actually wrecked. The fabric was torn, the poles were broken, they were irretrievable. Now, those of you who are familiar with the way we do the Mexico mission here at St. Stephen's know that I make a pretty big deal about us discerning together whether we're hearing God call us to take a team this year or not. And some of you probably get a little bit tired of me going on and on about that. But we don't go just because we want to go. We go because God has called and because we feel that we've heard that call. And stories like this, experiences like this, are exactly why we do this that way. Because when Simon and I were hunkered down in a little utility trailer at 4 o'clock that morning, trying to figure out what on earth we were going to do when the sun came up, the one thing that kept us looking forward, and we kept saying to each other, was, God called, right? Yes, God called. God had called us. God was with us. Our job was to try to figure out how God was leading and then to trust in that leading in this quite literal and figurative storm we were in the midst of. Well, God is gracious, and it did not take long for God's leading to appear. We got up at daybreak, we had some breakfast, we packed all of the team, well and sick, into the vans, and we headed back to the job sites to continue building as best we could. And by mid-morning, our Amore field rep came and found us on the sites with great news. They had been able to find a motel that could put up all 48 of us. Now, please remember, we are in the slums of Puerto Peñasco. We're not in a resort area where there's a lot of free accommodations around. Finding enough rooms in that one motel so we could keep the team together was a very big deal. And that sign of God's care and provision in the midst of all of this was so encouraging for the team members, so much so that it actually meant the rest of the day was not too bad. A few more cases of the bug popped up, but the people who'd gotten sick at the beginning of the trip were starting to recover and they were coming back and able to do a little bit of work. So we were managing to continue to make progress. Now I need to say that probably most of the team was not as aware of this next challenge slash crisis as I was. We went to work on the fourth and final morning, hoping to finish both homes that day so that the families could move in after we left. About an hour into that morning, I had a tap on my shoulder and I turned around and I saw Simon standing behind me looking particularly unwell. He needed to go to the hotel and go to bed. Now, at the risk of embarrassing him, I need to explain how central Simon and his ministry is to this mission. No one's indispensable, absolutely no one. But Simon's role is pretty important. I tend to get a lot of airtime because I'm the pastor. But as that's happening, he is quietly and steadfastly taking all the responsibility for getting our entire team of people from Qualicum Beach to the slums of Mexico, making sure we are safe while we are there, and then getting us back. Now that might sound easy. It's not. You ever tried to travel with a group? For starters, it's 48 opinions. Sorry, did I say opinions? I meant people. It involves 4 border crossings, buses, ferries, planes, vans, responsibility for other people's children. We take young people with us. Responsibility for other people's spouses and loved ones. And it's all happening in impoverished northern Mexico. And as you have heard, things there can change very, very quickly. And when that happens, it doesn't matter how buttoned down the plans you made 6 months ago are, they fly out the window like a dandelion being blown on the wind. And Simon handles all of that quietly, calmly, usually with a ridiculously healthy dose of playfulness and humor that leaves the rest of us just thinking he's having a good time with all this. And on that morning, I knew he was really sick because he left me alone on the sites to handle that. Now, I won't bore you with the details, but suffice it to say, it was not my best day. And my poor teams bore the brunt of that. Stuff happened. Stuff always happens in the mission field, but it's usually not that big of a deal. But I was at the end of my rope. And so I was not dealing particularly well with even the smallest of things. In one particularly low moment, I was trying to figure out how to respond to a conflict that was bubbling up in the team. And I just kind of lost it. I burst into tears. I walked very quickly off the site and went and hid behind a van so nobody could see me burst into tears. And a kind soul came over. She'd seen what had happened, and she gave me a hug, and she asked if I was okay. She wisely did not pry. She just wanted to know if I needed anything and let me know that I wasn't alone. Now, that probably sounds pretty ordinary to you, just someone showing some care for me. But I have to tell you that I really believe that God was in that moment. And so for me, that really was God sighting number one in this particular crisis. Well, this person went and got my daughter, who was on our job site. And I'll never forget how she walked. She came stomping over as only she can do. She embodies her dad's plucky Irish spunk and humor. And she did that with me. And because she did, it gave me a little bit of energy, a little bit of dose. It gave me the strength to actually kind of get over myself and look up a bit. And I really think God was in her doing that. Because when I did look up, the very first thing I saw when I came out from my pitiful hiding place behind the van was the father of the family we were building for, Manuel. At that moment, he came walking out from behind the house around the corner. He just was getting some more stucco to put on the back of his house. And that was God sighting number three for me. Because you see, when I saw him, I could see it on his face. He had a new hope. It hadn't been there for the first 3 days. But suddenly, he was starting to really believe that his family was not going to have to live in a 50-year-old, 14-foot, rotten travel trailer. That's what they'd been living in. But no more. When I saw that hope on his face, I discovered a new source for resolve and determination that I've never known before. It wasn't about me. It wasn't even about whatever conflict was brewing in our team. It was about him. And even more than that, it was about the one who had called us there to love him by building his family a home. In that moment, in the midst of what was honestly one of my lowest moments in ministry, God showed up big time and knew exactly what I needed to be able to lead that team to finish the house that day. And we did. Friends, I truly believe that the homes that we are able to build in Mexico are symbols. They are symbols, glimpses of that dream of life we have been talking about here this month. And as we are building them, God is bringing that dream into being. They represent for those families a new life, a life where children don't get surrendered to orphanages because their parents can't afford to look after them, a life where no one is hungry, a life where children get to stay in school, they're educated, they can grow and thrive. A life where love breaks the cycle of poverty and literally changes lives. And that year, more than any other, we were aware that there is much that tries to get in the way of those homes becoming a reality. That year, more than any other, I was tempted to give up. But it was God's love that made the difference. It was the glimpses of God's love in his provision for our team in motel rooms in Puerto Peñasco, Mexico. It was glimpses of his presence with us throughout those 3 days, his encouragement of our team in the face of sickness and a storm. And even more, it was God's love for Manuel. That's what dragged me out from behind that van and put a new resolve in me to keep my eyes on the prize. That little bit of God's promise of life that was becoming real before our very eyes. This is the way God keeps us going. These struggles are sometimes designed by forces that are working in opposition to God. Whether we like to think that way or not, it happens. And they're meant to derail us. But instead of doing that, they actually have the potential to sink us even more deeply into God's purposes. They shape us. They build our characters. Paul said it earlier in this same letter. Suffering leads to perseverance. It's how we grow in perseverance. Perseverance is how our characters develop. And when you have character, you can see hope. Because God's love has been poured into your heart. That's the progression that happens. I hear stories from you of how this happens all the time. I got to hear a beautiful one this week. It's one of the blessings of doing this job. It is your experiences of God's presence with you and provision throughout your lives, especially in those toughest moments. This is what has convinced you that God is with you. And that God will fulfill that promise to bring you to that dream of life one day. And so I agree wholeheartedly with Paul. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, nor angels nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor heights, nor depths, nothing in all creation, absolutely nothing, will be able to separate us from the love of God in Jesus Christ. Amen.